Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, and today it is my absolute pleasure to have as my guest, Jack McKissick. Jack McKissick is an American actor known for his powerful screen presence in both television and film. He has recurred in Showtime Netflix's Your Honor alongside Bryan Cranston, Paramount Plus's Mayor of Kingstown with Jeremy Renner, and Hulu FX's Clipped opposite Lawrence Fishburne. His credits also include Law & Order, SVU, SWAT, Station 19, The Residents, and films such as Breaking News in Yuba County, Bliss, Tag, and Superintelligence. Off screen, McKissick is an activist, community leader, and best-selling author of 50 Principles to Thrive in Life. The book entails life lessons McKissick learned while growing up in Opelika, Alabama, while attending Clemson University as an accomplished football player and beyond. Jack, it is a pleasure to have you on the program today. I've been looking forward to our conversation for quite a while now.
Absolutely. I'm glad to be here, and thank you for making the time for me. I know your schedule was busy, and we actually ended up making the podcast happen a little earlier than we thought because of the availability on Sunday, so thank you.
Well, you're welcome, and I know the life of an actor, it's pretty much you're just going consistently hard 6 days a week and typically 12 and 14 hour days. So it essentially, this isn't a 9-to-5 job as far as being a podcaster. So I will record around individual schedules, particularly if they're gracious enough like yourself to give me your time.
Absolutely. I appreciate it. And it is nonstop. I'm actually on the road now. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm in my hotel. So come here for a few meetings. It actually worked out better because I'm on your time now.
That's right.
Instead of Pacific, so it worked out.
Well, that's good, and it's amazing how kind of just like the universe conspires to make sure that certain things work out so that we can accomplish what we need to accomplish. So, we got to give a shout out though to Candace Snyder who introduced us. Candace is a podcaster. Matchmaker extraordinaire. She thought your story would align with my audience, and certainly just with the pre-conversations we had, I know your story and your journey and what you've learned is going to be of value to my audience. But there was one thing that I was a little concerned about. In the interest of transparency, I had to email you and tell you, look, I'm a Fighting Irish fan. So I had to make sure this wasn't going to be a deal breaker between us.
Definitely not a deal breaker. Only people that I view as enemies are the South Carolina Gamecocks, but I'll still do business with them. So we're both fighting for our lives right now, so no need to fight amongst each other.
That's right. All we need to do is pull for each other so that both our respective teams can get back to the standard of excellence that we're used to seeing from them. But as far as I'm concerned, it's always about shared values. It's not about which football team you root for, which baseball team you root for. Mm. And as long as we have shared values, there can be some really respectful kidding about who we root for on the outside as far as sports teams go. So,
absolutely.
But anyway, I have some questions for you, and I know you got some answers for me.
I got some answers for you.
So here we go. First of all, Jack, please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your current life path and your life passions today.
The experiences that I feel that have shaped my current state of who I am and what I believe in are my roots, where I grew up. You know, as you mentioned, I grew up in Opelika, Alabama, and also spent a lot of time with my grandmother and my great-grandmother on their farm in Salem, Alabama, which is, a very rural area is more of a community rather than a town. And just the work that it takes to like keep a farm going is a lot different than, you know, the small city life or a big town, rather, where Opelika is. Growing up there as a child, it was night and day when I would spend time at my grandmother's. And I remember very vividly as a six-year-old having to go out with my older brother and cousins and get the bales of hay and drag them down across the fields, go feed the cows and, you know, get the eggs or the chickens in the morning if you wanted breakfast. So just the level of responsibility and hard work, and also seeing my mom, who was a single mom, raise my older brother and I, and the way that she did it with such, you know, pride and dignity, and never making any excuses or complaining, that was the cornerstones and the foundation of who Jock McKissick is.
Yeah, and I can identify being raised by a single mom. My father left when I was 5 years old, and my mother, if it wasn't for my mother, I wouldn't be the person I am today. She instilled the sense of right and wrong, the values of treating people as you would like to be treated, always being transparent, being honest, dealing from integrity. You know, when she died, that was a major loss for me, because it was like in 1994, I felt like I'd been an orphan, and I'm married and I have three beautiful kids. Still, that was a major loss because of my mother. She's who I am today. And I'm very confident if my mom was alive and met your mother, they would get along famously.
Oh, absolutely. They have a lot of the same morals, and I'm sure a lot of the same standards when it comes to what they expect from their children.
Yeah.
I tell people all the time, I'm 39 now, and I have so much respect and honor for my mom that she's never heard me curse except for on TV. She calls and gives me a hard time about that sometimes. Like, this character cursing a lot. When I told you about all that cursing.
Yeah. And our moms are always going to be our moms. It doesn't matter if we're 39 or 60.
Oh, absolutely.
Man, they're still going to be our moms. So they're going to still give us the business when we're saying, hey, don't take the Lord's name in vain, or you're swearing too much in your role or whatever. You know, I didn't raise you like that. So, but... Yeah, I was telling you before we recorded, I saw the first episode of Mayor of Kingstown, and I'm anxious to get to the second season where you appear, and that's pretty intense, and I'm sure that's not for the faint of heart or for individuals who don't use profanity as part of their language. I'm looking forward to seeing you in that role.
Yeah, it's I tell people when they ask about it, or... Like, I told my mom and my family before they watched it, I said, hey, listen, this show is brutally honest. Unfortunately, this is a lot of people's reality. And it's just giving you a peek into some of the horrendous things that happen on a daily basis in some places.
Well, yeah. And I mean, brutally honest. I mean, I like brutally honest. I don't like anything sugar-coated. It's just like... And I like intense movies, intense series like Mayor of Kingstown. And there was Mystic River was one of my favorite movies with Sean Penn. And that was intense on a lot of different levels. So I like intense, very cathartic, very, very lifelike and honest movies. So like I said, I'm anxious to see you in that role. And
you're in for a treat.
I can't wait. And I, of course, now that I have your email address, I will send you my thoughts. So I'll tell you what I think. So.
Yeah.
But one of the things, I know your mom was a big influence growing up, but as an adult, as you continue to grow, who are the people that most influence your development as an adult? And what have you learned from them that has shaped how you see yourself and the world around you?
The first cornerstone in that is Dabo Swinney, you know, my head coach, the head coach at Clemson now. When I was there, he was the receivers coach until my senior year. He became the interim coach, but more importantly, he recruited me. So I got a chance to build that bond with him from day one of him coming into my school to recruit me and then coming into my home and learning about, you know, his childhood and his belief system and kind of his goal for me. And the biggest thing about his goals for me, and which have kind of become a foundational value of his, is making young men better young men. so that they'll be very productive citizens and husbands and brothers in the future. So he stuck beside that, and I got a chance to watch firsthand him be a living example of what it means to be a great husband, you know, father, et cetera. Coach Rupp, which was my defensive line coach, stand-up guy, he's had a tremendous career now. He got a chance to go to the NFL and coach for a while. He went to Alabama, Texas for a while. Now he's actually back at Clemson working with the defensive ends, but he was phenomenal, a phenomenal presence in my life in college. And the great Jeff Davis, who is a Hall of Fame college football player, who played at Clemson, and he went off, had a good career with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and then he returned to Clemson at first as an athletic director.
Yeah.
And now he is the CEO, president, et cetera, of Paul Journey, which is a program within the football program that instills those skills and guidance for the players off of the field. So as far as like everything from like etiquette when it comes to like dining to speech coaches, they set them up with financial literacy. They travel during spring break to meet with different companies in different cities for internships, which when I was in college, it was illegal for NCAA athletes to have internships. I'm glad they changed that. So now it exposes guys to all of the things that are available in life after football. And so, yeah, that Paul Journey wasn't around when I was at Clemson, but I like to say that I had an early version of Paul Journey by just going into Jeff Davis's office, speaking with him every day before or after practice. And after I graduated, you know, Finch, who is a mentor of mine, lives in Atlanta, I just reference him by a quote that he gave me that I still live by today with my mentees and my peers. I asked him for a favor once, and he said, yeah, just I'll call you tomorrow and get it to you. And if I don't call, just give me a call. It just means I'm busy. So next day came, he didn't call. And the pride in me, I didn't want to call him. I didn't want to like worry him or bother him. So I never called. So maybe 3 days later, he calls me and he's like, what happened? Why didn't you call me? And I was like, well, I knew you were busy. I didn't want to bother you. And he said, if I tell you I'm going to do something for you, that means I'm going to do it. And if I don't call or I don't contact you, it just means I'm busy. It doesn't mean that I'm turning my back on you. And then the last thing he said just stuck out to me. He said, You have full permission to use me. Just don't misuse me. Like, it didn't hit at first. And he said, you got full access to me. Use me. Just don't misuse me. I was like, oh, man, that's powerful. So, and then one of my mentors, Brock Lawrence, who is a business mogul. He owns a very successful hair care line called Hair Affinity. And one of the most important things I heard him say, make sure you treat the janitor like you treat the CEO. And that one stood out to me big time for sure, because that's kind of like some of the values that my mom instilled in me growing up. So just having guys like that pouring information into me that I'm not exposed to or I haven't been privy to growing up or in college, yeah, it's definitely been vital as an adult, for sure.
Well, and it sounds like all of the mentors from your Clemson football days and beyond helped prepare you for life beyond football. Because, you know, as you know, what the life of an athlete is finite. And I think college coaches, administrators, teachers need to invest in students and student-athletes as just not student and student-athletes, but as people. What can we impart upon them that's going to prepare them for life?
Bingo.
You know, and I tell my students the same thing. Look, you have full access to me. It's just that I'm not going to just come in and do a lecture and then leave and then you can't contact me. I am accessible to you in any way that you need me to be accessible to you, because I want you to succeed, not only in the classroom, mm-hmm. but in life to the extent that you wish to succeed. And if I can be a part of that, I would love to be a part of that journey if you'll let me. But we have to sometimes, I think, roll out the red carpet because, you know, sometimes you get this from pastor syndrome that goes on that, well, geez, you know, Dave is too busy as a professor. He's probably not going to have time for me, which mm-hmm. is furthest from the truth. Because when I make a commitment, when I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And that's also my mom's influence. She said, she always taught me, don't say anything or do anything that you can't back up with action.
Bingo.
So yeah. It sounds like we've had similar influences, and it sounds like you had some really, really great individuals in addition to your mom that have helped you develop as a person.
Yeah, for sure. And I definitely can't leave out the people that have been there for me once I started my acting career, because their mentorship is golden for me. Guys like Greg Allen Williams, who's a longtime actor, he's probably top five in the amount of credits he's had as an actor. He started way back in like the 70s. His first big role was on Baywatch. He was like the only black guy on Baywatch back in the day. And he's just been working nonstop for years. And I met him on set of Necessary Roughness, the show that I was an extra on. That's where I got my start in 2011 and 12. And he was just so vital in instilling that confidence in me. I told him that I had an idea to like create a web series, but I didn't want to because I didn't know how to write scripts. And he said, I don't ever want to hear you say it again. So you can write. He said, you're a college graduate. You just need to learn the structuring of writing a script.
Yeah.
So every day we would come to work, he would hand me his script. And he would say, when we're shooting, I want you to follow along the script and see the actions. So even in scenes where I was a football player on the show, even in the scenes that we weren't in, he would call me out to watch them shoot so that I could follow along and see how the show was written. And it was so vital to me becoming a writer, a screenwriter. So he was the first. And Mikhail Brooks, another actor, Clifton Powell, who is a phenomenal actor, one of my favorite actors. And he's been so vital to me about acting and just life in general. He's one of those people that are extremely vulnerable about the mistakes they make, and they don't want to see younger people make the same mistakes. The great Bryan Cranston, he's given me some vital information and advice. And Lawrence Fishburne, who's become like a mentor to me now. I speak to him a good bit. So, yeah, I definitely want to mention those guys, too, because I've also been acting for 14 years. And acting is one of those professions where there's no one blueprint of like, oh, you go to college, you go to do a residency, and then you get a job. And there's so many ways to go about it. And you just learn as you go and take a little bit of wisdom from each person that you've seen come before you. And you kind of add it to your pot of gumbo and just make it work.
Yeah, you take a little bit from this person, a little bit from that person. Then you develop your own philosophy of acting, your own philosophy of life. The guy, Lawrence Fishburne, I remember one of the roles that was pretty memorable for me. I think he was in Mystic River with Sean Penn and... you know, Tim Robbins, and of course, Bryan Cranston, Breaking Bad was probably one of my favorite series of all times.
It's my favorite series, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I remember watching it. I caught on to it late. I didn't watch it until maybe 2015 for the first time. And when I watched it, I just couldn't stop. I would spend whole days just watching the show. Once I finished the last season, I said, man, I can't wait to work, man. Mm-hmm. And let's see, it's five years later, I got a chance to work with him. So it's one of those things, man, you just got to believe. You got to put it out there into the universe and watch it come into fruition.
Well, it's also, you can't underestimate the importance of hard work either. And you've worked hard to get where you're at today. And there's the other part of you put it out in the universe, but you also put in the work too to get to what you want to manifest.
Oh, absolutely. My motto is, everybody has the quote where they say, oh, good things come to those who wait. I say, well, good things come to those who do.
Yep.
Yeah, you gotta put in some action. You know, I just don't want to, you know, pray to God and ask him for these things and just sit around and wait on the couch. So you're absolutely right with that, Dave.
Yep. Yeah. You got to put the work in to get what you want. So are there any other lessons or principles that you've applied from your time as an athlete to your career as an actor, filmmaker, and entrepreneur?
Oh, man. Yes. The first would be short-term memory. Our coaches used to say that all the time. And basically what that means is, you know, within football, any sport really, but definitely football, because there's so many plays. If you have a bad play, and you hang on to that mistake you made, or, you know, how you got defeated, how this guy has, you know, got the upper hand on you. If you hang on to that, you'll probably lose the next play. And I think that applies to life in general. If you hang on to, you know, that hurt, that depression, that loss, you hang on to it so tightly, you know, you'll fumble the next thing that comes along that could be a blessing or an opportunity because your hands are full.
Yep.
And that applies so much to acting, because you get multiple auditions, I was about to say a word that my mom would appreciate. You get more rejection than you do acceptance. A lot of people who come from situations that are well off, or they're very spoiled and everything has gone their way, and they become an actor, that rejection is so heavy. And one of the things that I feel like has helped me remain in such a positive headspace throughout these 14 years is I have that short-term memory, and I'm able to do an audition or go into a meeting to pitch my script and get a no and say, oh, okay, all right, and move on.
Yep.
You know, to the next, looking for the next door. So that's important. And then secondly, you gotta outwork the next man. You know, that's in sports. If you're not working, you know, my strength coach used to say, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Well, you said every day. And so I apply that to, you know, acting as well. If you're not getting better, you're getting worse. So if you're not on set or you're not in class, you should be reading, should be studying, should be watching the interviews, because you can learn such a great deal from watching interviews from people and just hearing their life stories and just implementing some of that advice to your life. I tell people all the time, one of my principles in my book is borrow some sense, which I got from my grandmother. And she would tell us that all the time. A smart man borrows a sense, only a fool buys it. I never knew what she meant until I was probably 18 or 19. And it finally clicked. And I've heard other versions of that sense, where they say some people are smart. A smart person learns from their mistakes. A wise person learns from others. Kind of the same thing. You can learn a lot by just watching and listening to other people as well. So all those things go into the formula of, like, working hard. And the moment you get lax is the moment I feel you get passed up. So I took that from football and just sports in general. From all the sports I played, especially when I got to college, that idea of working hard clicked, because everybody was either equally as good as me or better. I had to put in the work. And when I got into acting, I kind of had that same feeling. This was new to me. I was 25 at the time, I think. Yeah. And I was getting into an industry where some people went to college for it. Some people had been doing it professionally for years. And I was just a young man who grew up in Alabama that got his start at age 7, but got his start on the church stage plays and the school plays. Nothing professionally or training-wise. So I knew I had to work hard. Yep. Because a lot of times people feel that they deserve things that they haven't worked for.
Yeah. But you know, like you said, hard work takes care of a lot of, you know, you could have an individual who may not be as intelligent or may not be as athletic as the next guy, but if they're willing to put in the work, they're going to be better than individuals who have that God-given or innate talent because they're putting in the work. And the other thing that I interpreted from what you said is that don't rest on your laurels. You know, like for every new acting opportunity is the first day of your career as an actor. I have the same attitude as a college professor where I tell my students, I said, well, I've been doing this for 22 years, but every new class is the first day of my new job. Every class is different. And if I don't put in the work to get to know my students, to try to impart, to try to prepare them as best as I can for the outside world and for life in general, beyond the knowledge that's inherent with the coursework that they do, then you're going to have, I'm going to have 22 students, tell 22 other students, don't take Professor Roberts for anything because I got nothing out of it. So it's not resting on your laurels, not taking anything for granted, because I think people, like you said, who have a sense of entitlement, who put themselves up on a pedestal, and you've seen this, I think probably in the world of sports, acting, the fall is very steep.
Absolutely.
And you can't get back up to the level that you once were. But once you're down there, everything's different now.
Yeah, I agree. I've seen it from afar, and it's something that I plan to never witness because, you know, I plan to do the work and stay on top, you know, and keep striving for more and, you know, more information, more experiences, you know. So I think we have a lot of the same morals for sure.
I think we had both our mothers, and I had my maternal grandmother and my maternal aunt who also were very instrumental in raising me, and they instilled many of the same values and reinforced a lot of the same values. So the women in my life, you know, growing up, as for you, as with you, were very instrumental in, I think, where we both are today.
Yeah, absolutely.
So sure. Now, you mentioned your book earlier, so I want to talk about your book. 50 Principles to Thrive in Life. And as I recall, there's significance of the number 50 for you. So, but what I also want to find out is what inspired you to write the book and what do you want readers to take away from it?
So a lot of my peers have been telling me for years, like, hey, you should write a book. You know, like, you're so wise, or, you know, you have an old soul, as they say in the South. And I would always say, yeah, one day, just because I knew the time that it would take to sit down and actually focus and write a full book. I knew I didn't have that time just to do it with focusing on progressing as an actor and producer. So I met Linda Sunshine West, who is my publisher. I met her at ESPY's Gift and Suite. And a couple of days later, she reached out to me and she's like, hey, I did my research. I love your story. I want to help you tell your story and write your first book. And I was like, all right, well, you know, we can jump on the Zoom. So we get on the Zoom and I tell her, like, hey, I'm not really ready to write a biography or anything yet. I got a lot left to do, but I think I have some stuff that would help people. So we had a long conversation and we came up with the idea that the book would be principles, a list of principles. These principles are things that I've learned from early memory, you know, 4 or 5 years old until last year, you know, when I wrote the book. And they're just, there are 50 principles that I feel are very vital to thriving in life, being successful as a human being and also a business person. What I want people to take away from the book is, you're not alone. first of all, because the biggest thing I've heard from people who have read the book is these principles are slapping me in my face. You know, it's like you were in my house and watching me. And, you know, you knew I needed to hear X, Y, and Z. And in life, a lot of times we feel like we're going through things and nobody can relate. And when you open this book, I guarantee there are going to be several things that my preacher growing up used to say, I'm walking down your street. Somebody's walking down your street. That means they're really close to home for you. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to walk down your street in several areas because these principles I took time with to actually decide which things would help empower people. So yeah, that's, I would want people to take that from the book and then also just be open to applying these new ideas to your life.
Yeah, that's a book that I'm going to be anxious to get my hands on because I'm convinced that I can learn something from reading your book. And one of the fallacies, I think, is that sometimes people will buy into, well, you know, you're too young for me to learn from you, and I'm too old mm-hmm. for you to learn from me, which I think is really a bunch of crap, because as long as we are sharing the same human DNA, mm-hmm. we can learn from each other, respective of age.
And, absolutely. Right.
And I tell my students, I said, you know, you're not too young. You're not too young for me to learn from you, and I'm not too old for you to learn from me. And we share that where we kind of bear witness for each other. We hold space for each other, and we learn from each other because it enriches everybody.
Absolutely.
And it builds that sense of community, which obviously you've been able to do with that book, because people are saying, I'm not alone. Every time one person comes up and says that they're not alone, and then another person, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you built a community just through that book, just through your words. And that's powerful.
Absolutely.
And that's powerful.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've shed a lot of joyous tears when people giving me feedback from how the book has impacted their lives positively. Just looking forward to more of those moments.
My suspicion is there's going to be plenty more down the road for you, Jack.
I think so. And the great thing about books is they last forever. So you see these books that have these moments of shooting up the charts, and they've been out for 10 years because one person found out about it and spread it into the world. I'm looking forward to more of the world just finding out about the book. So yeah, I'm excited.
Well, there's no expiration date on the impact of life lessons.
Absolutely.
Now, I'm going to throw a few principles at you that I found, I think, in your LinkedIn description online that I know are related mm-hmm. to the book or related to your life philosophy. So I'm just going to throw out a couple and just get your response to those, if you're okay mm-hmm. with that. So,
yeah, sure.
Okay. So first of all, why is comfort our greatest enemy? And how can discomfort be our greatest ally in our ongoing personal growth and development?
I think comfort is our greatest enemy because, as we touched on earlier, comfort is you're resting on your laurels, as you mentioned. And you not only hinder yourself, but you hinder everyone around you because you're not allowing information in, you're not allowing information out. And I think the moment you allow yourself, you get comfortable and you stop allowing yourself to grow, that's the moment you start dying. Yeah. And when it comes to working or, you know, a career, you never can get too comfortable because there's always something left to do. There's always something left to learn. So you just can't get in that state of, oh, I'm uncomfortable with this, I'm good now. And discomfort can be our greatest ally because I think getting comfortable being uncomfortable is one of the keys to growth. Because a lot of times when you go through these spaces of time where, you know, you're having a bunch of barricades and roadblocks, detours, whatever it may be, whether mentally, physically, career-wise, family-wise, those are the spaces where you're going to grow. And when you come out on the other side, you're going to be so much stronger, so much more educated, so much more eager to, you know, experience the success that you walk into. And if you're able to be comfortable in that discomfort zone, it's beautiful. You know, it's beautiful. I've found that throughout my journey when I've had the most difficult times and I've been able to just sit in it and reset my focus and we're kind of recalibrating, like, hey, this is just something I'm going through, but I'm going to be better because of it. Now let's go attack it.
Yes.
When I came out of it, it was such a sweet experience. So it's definitely something that I think you have to constantly remind yourself of, that the discomfort can be an ally, because it's not easy. Nobody likes discomfort. But once you learn that, oh, it's only making me better. And the other thing is, it's temporary. A lot of times when we go into situations, we think, oh man, like a lot of times people put too much weight on it as if this is the final say of their journey. I've seen it with some family members when it came to sicknesses, they just give up. Yeah. Or when it comes to people failing, quote unquote, success or goals, they just give up. But if you enter that thing with the idea of this is temporary, then, you know, it's got to be so much sweeter when you come out on the other side, for sure.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think our greatest growth occurs out of our greatest discomfort, or out of our mm-hmm. greatest challenges. We can learn from the positive things that happen, but I think we learn more from the negative events in our lives. And mm-hmm. I've said this on my podcast, on other podcasts, that the quality of our life is determined not by the fairness of it, but by our ability to transcend any challenges that are presented. We are inevitably going to be presented with challenges.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I learned a long time ago that life isn't necessarily fair. But it's what we make of the challenges that are presented to us that determine the life that we lead moving forward. So, all right, here's another one for you that I got. Why is swagger more about preparation than luck?
Swagger, man, swagger is important. I think a lot of times when people hear the word swag, or they think of cockiness,
yep.
But it's more so confident. And it stems from being confident, because when you prepare for whatever it is you have ahead, whether it's a test, whether it's lecture, whether it's an audition or a role or a pitch meeting that you're going into, whatever it may be. But when you prepare and you work hard, you go above and beyond, you have an air about yourself, and your aura precedes you when you enter a space. And a lot of times people see that and they think, like, oh, he's cocky or she's cocky. Just know what they're witnessing is someone who has done the work.
Yes.
And when you've done the work, you have this sense of swagger to you that can't really be explained.
Well, and it all goes back to what was instilled in you as a young man, and continuing as you continue to grow up, was the importance of hard work. And, you know, mm-hmm. you look at athletes like LeBron James, mm-hmm. Magic Johnson, they have swagger.
Yeah.
But they also work hard. I mean, yeah. They work out hard. Mm-hmm. They prepare for every game hard. They perfect their craft hard. Larry Bird was one of my all-time favorite player. He was the biggest trash talker of all time. You know,
absolutely.
According to a lot of the athletes now who have revealed this on other podcasts, but he would tell everybody, this is what's coming. and you're not going to be able to stop it. I'm going to go to the corner, take two steps back, drain a three, and we're all going home. And he did it. He did it. But what you didn't see was behind the scenes is he was the first one to practice, the last one to leave, and he led by example, and he led through hard work. And if I'm a teammate of his, and I'm looking at that, and I'm saying, geez, I can't make any excuses for not working hard. When your leader is out there putting in the work, how could you not follow suit? And all these guys I mentioned had swagger, but they
all of them.
Yeah, they backed it up with hard work.
They backed it up, and it comes from their hard work. You know, Kobe Bryant, who didn't have to say a word, but you could just feel that swagger. You know, like, and it stems from things like the stories that you're hearing now that he's passed away, like when they went to the Olympics and the Olympic team is coming down from their rooms to go to breakfast. And Kobe's sitting at the table with ice wrapped around his knees because he's already done a workout. LeBron, he gets to the games 4 hours early and, you know, he's the only one in the arena putting up shots. Like, it's just, there's no confusion about why these guys are great, you know.
And we got to throw Michael Jordan in the mix too. He's another one, you know, that.
Oh my God. Yeah. Michael, Steph Curry, you know, you go to football, the guys that work extra hard, like Deion Sanders, Tom Brady, the guys that they work so hard. Chad Ochocinco, who was one of the greatest trash talkers in football, man, his workout was insane. Like, there's just, if you look at the track record, you'll see like that hard work. You get that type of, you know, swagger from those guys. So I try to implement that into everyday life, you know, even after being an athlete.
Yeah, I mean, the lessons of hard work can come from anywhere. It come from an athlete, come from a college professor, it can come from an actor, it can come from anybody that is working hard to perfect their craft. So
absolutely.
All right, now I did some digging for this one. I saw an appearance that you had on the podcast Success Nothing Less with Cat Harvey.
Yeah.
And she mentioned something from your Clemson football days. I'm going to ask you, how is it this activity important to your growth as a football player and in life? Spiritual two-a-days.
Actually, forgot me and Cat talked about that. I don't even know how that came up, because it's so long ago, but I actually still have a shirt from a college that Spiritual Tour Days. Spiritual Tour Days was it was a program that we had in college amongst the football team. And during the summer camp, fall, we would have Spiritual Tour Days. Our team chaplain at the time, Tony Eubanks, it was another guy that instilled and kind of helped guide me along the way. He said, "Hey guys, we're working hard on the field. We're going to practice twice a day. We're doing all these things. You're putting so much into that area of your life. Spiritually, it should be just as focused and as much effort into it. So we're going to start this thing called Spiritual Tour Days." Himself, a couple of his guys that worked alongside him, guys within the staff, Coach Rump, Coach Joey Bassin, the strength coach, and Judge Davis, his nickname is Judge, Jeff Davis, who I mentioned earlier, they would all be leaders in Spiritual Tour Days, and they would be, maybe six or seven guys would be assigned to each person. And twice a day, we would go to them and meet. And sometimes they would prepare a couple of scriptures, and then we would discuss it. Sometimes we would go, we'd just sit down and, "What's on your heart? What are you guys battling right now?" And we would discuss it. And having that in college, especially early on in my career, was vital because it allowed me to experience balance. The fact that you are working so hard physically and you are working so hard mentally in the classroom, you need to be working just as hard spiritually. Because you need that spiritual compass to guide you daily. When especially you need that when the earthly things start to fail you. You need that spiritual backbone. So having that Spiritual Tour Days, man, was something that got us through tough times. I've kind of implemented that into my daily life since college, for sure.
Yeah, and I think when that type of program or similar programs get instilled, I think it allows the college coaches, the chaplains, anybody that's associated with the athletic program to know the students beyond the football field, to know the athletes mm-hmm. beyond the football field. A wise mentor told me, he said, when you supervisor, you're responsible for other people under your command. Mm-hmm. Make sure you get to know as much about them personally as professionally, because what happens in their personal lives, and we can extend it, their spiritual lives are going to impact what they do in their work life.
Absolutely.
So understanding that, you can be a more effective presence. And also it emphasizes the humanitarian part of supervision, which tends to get, I think in a lot of ways, Jack, it tends to get underestimated or overlooked.
Yeah, I think that is extremely vital, especially even the opposite perspective of them getting to know you.
Yes.
And when you're in a leadership position, the best leaders that I've known are the people that lead with we, and that I need to do this, you need to do, you know, the we people get the best results. And when you become vulnerable and you share things about yourself, and it really opens up the eyes of your team. And that's kind of what Spiritual Tuesdays did when, you know, these coaches who we, you know, we admire, we look up to, some of them we're scared of, like our strength coach. And he's opening up about struggling with being confident.
Yes.
You know, struggling with marriage, or, you know, just things that you don't even, as an 18 or 19 year old, you don't think these people experience. And them being vulnerable with you and opening up, it just builds so much camaraderie. And that's by far the best way you get great results.
And I think we connect to something that's greater than ourselves, whether it be a sense of community to a higher power. And I think mm-hmm. with spirituality, that's one of the reasons people do develop a spiritual identity, is because of that connection to something greater than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
One of my last questions for you today is, if you could leave our listeners with just one thing today, and you've left our listeners with a lot already, Jack, but just mm-hmm. one ultimate takeaway from today, what would that be?
I would leave them with my favorite scripture, which is Proverbs 27:17. And that's just as iron sharpens iron, one man must sharpen another. And the reason why it's my personal favorite is because, you know, we can quote the scriptures about God, but I think too often people take for granted what we are supposed to do here.
Yes.
To succeed and to help one another. And it's a reminder and a slap in the face that you are accountable for making your peers and your counterparts better, and vice versa. And not only making them better, but allowing them to grow and succeed because of your growth and success. And I'm reminded of that daily. I repeat that to myself often. And I try to make sure that I am sharpening somebody else, you know, every chance I get.
Yeah, and that's a great principle to live by, because our actions, good and bad, are going to affect, you know, the legacy that we leave or the marks that we leave behind. We put good out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be just something as opening a door for somebody. And I've tried this little social mm-hmm. experiment mm-hmm. where I've opened a door for somebody, and that person ultimately is going to hold the door for somebody else behind him, and it carries like a chain reaction.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what we put out there, how we treat our fellow human being, is going to make a difference in the mark that we leave in the world, and also that the mark that they're going to leave in the world.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I have a chain that has a double six domino on it. And the company that makes it is called the Domino Effect. And it's basically a reminder that every good deed creates a domino effect of the same. And I wear that as a reminder too, you know, just do something great, And I have this list of things that I do daily. It's called Different Day, Same Goals. And what you just mentioned is one of the goals on there is do something for three people that will never be able to repay you again. And, you know, just random strangers, whether it's opening the door, paying it forward by paying for their food, whatever it may be. Just, you know, doing your part to make somebody else's day better, you know.
And, you know, and one of the things that I'm reminded of a quote from my favorite all-time drummer and musician, Neil Peart, the late Neil, great Neil Peart of the mm-hmm. band Rush, who was a brilliant lyricist, but also a brilliant writer. In one of his songs, there was a line that said something to the effect that we are all islands to each other, building hopeful bridges in a troubled sea. So our iron sharpens iron reminds me that we are all islands to each other and that we need to build bridges, but, you know, with our fellow human being.
I love that.
Yeah, that's something that has stayed with me as one of the teachings that has influenced me. Boy, I could talk to you for about another 2 hours, but you've got some things to do on your Sunday, my friend. I want to give you an opportunity to promote yourself a little bit. If people want to find out more about you, find out you know what you're doing in the acting world, purchase your book. What's the best way for them to do that, Jack?
So if you want to purchase the book, the quickest way would just be go to Amazon, 50 Principles to Thriving Life by me, Jack McKissick. And if you want to find me, you can find me on, you know, Twitter. Well, it's called X, but I refuse to call it that. The name is on Twitter and Instagram is J50. It's spelled out J-A-Y-F-I-F-T-Y. Got it. And LinkedIn, Facebook, it's just Jack McKissick.
And I'll make sure all of your contact information, book information, gets in the episode notes. So with that, Jack, thank you so much for just a wonderful conversation today. I know our listeners are going to benefit greatly from your wisdom. So thank you again for your time.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And with that, that's a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.